you know, economically for companies, it's good to be based there.
Hello, welcome to episode 63 of the MedTech Podcast. You join me, your host, Karandeep Singh Badwell. Under this episode, we have Steve Curran, Senior Regulatory Consultant at Trinso, and Medical Device and Pharmaceutical Consultancy Firm. Steve Curran has over 20 years' experience in the medical device industry, both as an engineer and leader developing medical devices, but also as a notified body regulator, ensuring that devices are compliant when they reach the market. He has a broad range of experience from general medical devices to orthopedic and dental devices and combination devices incorporating drugs and biologics. In this episode, we explore why Ireland is becoming a growing sector in this industry, the parallels of working at a notified body to a consultancy, the concept of a virtual manufacturer, which market to enter first, the UK, EU or USA, and Steve's advice for those looking to get into quality and regulatory roles. Welcome to the show, Steve. How are you today?
I'm good, Karandeep. Yeah, very good indeed. And nice to be here.
So Ireland is becoming a growing sector for medtech. What would you say is the reason for this?
I mean, I think in Ireland, it's been really developing in medtech and biotechnology for, well, since the 1990s, really. It's built up now to be quite the hub in Ireland for the medtech and biotech industry. You know, some of the really big players like Medtronic, Boston Scientific, Abbott, they're all based there. And now I think that, you know, starting to approach like 500 SMEs that are based in Ireland in the medtech industry. There's something like 40,000 people at least working in that sector. You know, over time, I think that it's now a situation where, you know, 80% of stents, cardiovascular stents, 50% of ventilators and 25% of injectable devices for things like diabetes are actually manufactured in Ireland, and they're going worldwide. So it really is the hub at the moment. I think it's largely down to, you know, there's a highly skilled workforce there, and they've got a number of, you know, the top education facilities in Ireland for medtech, you know, places like UCD, Trinity College, etc. It's also obviously, you know, English speaking, which helps a lot. You know, economically for companies, it's good to be based there, but also there's now, you know, things like SkillNet Ireland, where they can support new companies in terms of network development and innovation. So there are certainly a lot, it's well established, and there's certainly now a lot of attractive other elements in Ireland that I think are helping to fuel that growth in medtech and biotech.
And do you feel as though Brexit has helped accelerate Ireland in terms of medtech, or what's your opinion on this?
Yeah, to a degree, I think it has. You know, companies want to operate globally. They want to operate in the EU, and so with you know, the UK breaking away, I think to a degree that's helped Ireland. Move in that direction. Yeah, I'd say so.
Perfect. So I know that you spent a lot of time working with notified bodies, and now you're on the other side of the desk as a consultant. How have you find that transition, right? And what advice would you give to people to do it right?
So, yeah, I mean, for me, it's been quite a varied career, I'd say. I mean, I didn't actually start out in medical devices. I started out as a chemical engineer, working in petroleum, oil and gas sector. And it was in the late 90s, I suppose, that I was introduced into medical devices. Really at the time when tissue engineering, stem cell engineering, all of that kind of stuff was all new and really the big wow thing. And I was in Canada at the time, as I say, working in the petroleum industry. And I came back to the UK to do a PhD in that area. So I did that. And then I was in academia for maybe 4 years before I then actually moved fully into the medical device industry, working for a large medtech company. So I was based in the UK, but was working sort of globally in their other operations. And so on that, when I was in that environment, I was still a very much at the forefront of research and development for medical devices, but also progressively working with diverse manufacturing facilities globally. So my years in that environment, you know, taught me a huge amount in terms of, you know, being on that side of the fence as a manufacturer, if you like, developing devices and understanding the manufacturing aspects and understanding the regulatory aspects and all those things. And it was at that point then, after a number of years, I, if you like, jumped over the fence and then worked for nearly 9 years for a major notified body as a technical file reviewer, but also as an auditor. So, you know, being on site, auditing facilities. And in that time, you know, we're talking about, you know, auditing files and facilities from the really major med tech companies all the way down to, you know, the really small SMEs where there might be one or two employees. So I saw the full depth and breadth of it all. And then subsequently, after being the notified body, I then jumped back over the fence again and worked for, if you like, a virtual manufacturer of general medical devices. So as a virtual manufacturer, you know, they didn't do any of the manufacturing themselves. Most of it was done in the Far East. It was a great opportunity then to use skills, you know, again, with knowledge of manufacturing, particularly notified body experience, to do a lot of audits in the Far East of suppliers and manufacturers for that company, as well as managing the regulatory and quality team back home here in the UK. And then latterly, after that move, again, working for another small orthopedic company, again, in that role as a compliance director, looking after the quality and regulatory functions there. So in all, it's been quite a good and interesting journey. It's with that experience and knowledge, you do see clearly from both sides of the fence, and obviously being in the notified body for a while, that knowledge is obviously very useful. Working as a consultant now and working with other companies to help them, if you like, coordinate their documentation and coordinate their procedures and all these other things that the notified bodies are looking for, you know, to try to smooth the path for them to get the, if you like, their devices approved, but also, you know, ensure that the devices are manufactured as intended, perform safely for the benefits of, if you like, at the end of it, the patient themselves, because that's what everybody's working together to keep in mind is that it's the patient benefits at the end.
So, Steve, what would you say are the common mistakes that you saw when you worked with the notified bodies? What are some of the things that companies can quite easily fix to avoid any issues?
Yeah, I think certainly, you know, my experience was a lot related to technical documentation, reviewing technical documentation and moving that forward for approval. And I suppose one of the common things is that, you know, when you submit your technical file, it's really keeping it, you know, clear, concise, well-organized, following that STED format. You know, the first thing as an auditor when you're looking at files is it easy to navigate? Is the content complete? And does it logically flow? The last thing you want to see is, you know, it's something of a jumbled up mess. It's very difficult to work your way through it. It immediately sets an auditor off, I would say, on a path of frustration and it's not what you want to start out. So that's one thing, it's just a very basic thing, but keep it, you know, well organized. As we know now with like the MDR and, you know, other regulatory bodies in other countries and territories are following suit, of course, but, you know, we know that the big things in MDR are risk and clinical, so they've considerably ramped up. So doing a really good job on your risk and clinical, I think, is something that should be very carefully addressed. You know, when you do your risk analysis, it should be I think something whereby it involves, you know, all the key functions. So sometimes, you know, risk can be just handled by R&D or it can be just handled by quality. I think the important thing is when you do your risk assessment that you have a full and complete team of all the key functions that will be involved so that every element really of risk around the device that you're manufacturing is addressed. The same, I suppose, clinically now, it's having sufficient clinical evidence, sufficient clinical documentation to support the intended use of the device. You know, it's ramped up so much now that that should always be at the forefront of every manufacturer's mind as to the amount and depth of the clinical data that they have available to them is fully used. Of course, now, you know, with PMCF, under MDR, you need to conduct clinical investigations and at the very least need to do post-market clinical follow-up. That in itself can be a challenge for manufacturers now, particularly post-COVID, to actually get the enrollment and get the studies moving and get that data in. That in itself is a challenge. So that should be thought about at the early stage of requirements around that and what can be realistically be achieved, and maybe have that conversation with the notified body so that expectations on both sides are clearly understood. Again, elements around post-market surveillance, incorporating that data into your clinical and feeding that in with risk and ultimately maybe back to design of the devices, you know, needs to be considered. So that's going to be looked at closely. But then I suppose the other elements are just basic things that in my experience that I've seen and actually working with manufacturers is things like the preclinical testing. So the big ones are clinical and risk, but even the preclinical testing. So things like biocompatibility, has that been fully addressed? Sometimes it's only partially addressed and not fully addressed, and the time and cost to go back and complete that. All of that suite of tests, if they're not complete, can really slow down, you know, the approval process for a manufacturer, which of course is costly. And then other things like, you know, shelf life testing, the stability testing of devices, sometimes is not, fully covered. That might include as well transit testing. Sometimes the basic tests are done, but the end remaining functionality of the device is sometimes missed out. And so that can mean having to go back and do some repeat testing. So it's important, like I said at the start, that, all the key functions are involved in planning out every stage. Most companies will have some form of stage gate process that they move through, from the inception of a device through to the very end when it's actually being placed on the market. And to my mind, even from the very outset, again, all the key functions should be involved in that journey and understanding how things are progressing carefully to flag up any potential issues that might come along.
So you said something interesting earlier, which is virtual manufacturer. For the listeners today who may not know what that is, what is a virtual manufacturer? What does that mean?
Yeah.
And what does it involve?
So, a virtual manufacturer, in essence, basically subcontracts everything. Okay, so they don't do any manufacturing at all. Everything is subcontracted out. So that will be from manufacturing of the device. It will be through sourcing the materials to make the device. It will largely be a lot of the testing. So they use test houses to do the various testing to, like I talked about before, to meet the requirements of MDR for preclinical testing. They'll do the packaging, they'll do the sterilization, and in most instances, or in some instances, they'll actually do the shipping as well. So everything is remote from the actual legal manufacturer. The legal manufacturer, of course, has absolute responsibility for the devices and all the things that it entails under, say, MDR, for a CE-marked approval of the device. The legal manufacturer, they have the total responsibility. So they need to ensure that if everything is subcontracted, it's all done in a way that, you know, that meets all the requirements. So it's actually more of a challenge, I think, sometimes for a virtual manufacturer because, you know, everything is remote. So they've got to work out ways to ensure that whoever they're using, you know, is fully compliant and meets meets the requirements for the design that they've come up with for the device. So in essence, virtual manufacturer or manufacturer who effectively do not manufacture, they give it all to somebody else to do.
So as we've transitioned from MDD to MDR, what would you say are some of the lesser known things that companies are making mistakes on?
Again, I think I'd come back to the big ones where the step changes are, and that's risk and clinical. I think manufacturers are just underestimating, the demands that basically notified bodies have been placed under. You know, they've got to maintain their designation to MDR. And, you know, if you look at, if you do the word counts on how many times risk and clinical appear in MDR compared to MDD, it's a significant jump. It's a significant jump in itself in terms of the size of the MDR compared to MDD. They are two areas that right from the outset manufacturers should be really conscious of and do a really thorough look at the state of the art to get a clear understanding of the intended use of their device and do a really good gap analysis as to what they need to do to bring particularly risk and clinical in line that will meet that MDR requirement. Because, as I say, the notified bodies are... I think every manufacturer will probably see that compared to when they made MDD submissions, MDR submissions now, they're probably finding they're getting a lot more questions, particularly in those areas. I know from the notified body I worked for, and it'll be the same for others, that, you know, particularly clinical, they have their own dedicated clinical reviewers now who just look at the clinical evaluation, the PSURs. Typically they have, actual healthcare professionals having to work within the notified body. So, for example, if it's orthopedics, they tend to have an orthopedic surgeon on hand or a cardiovascular surgeon on hand within the notified body to make, to give expert insight in terms of the clinical data that's being presented. So, these things need to be considered, that the evaluation of clinical risk in particular has really ramped up.
So, hot topic at the moment, UK, EU or USA, which market should you attack first? What's your opinion on that?
Well, the UK at the moment, obviously, are still operating really under MDD compared to MDR. So that makes things lighter, I would say. A little lighter. I mean, there's still a lot of requirement that you need to do under MDD. For the US, if it's a 510K route, then again, typically a submission of a 510K is lighter than say an MDR submission. There's a few less things to do, but still, it's a wealth of detailed documentation that you need to submit. If you're not going down a 510K route, then it's a PMA route, and that's a challenge in itself. So this, probably UK is the lighter one to start, but obviously you're restricted solely to the UK for selling your device. The US probably, I'd say, next, and that gives you, good access to, obviously the US, which is a huge market, but with approval from the FDA, then, it opens doors and opportunities for other markets. Canada will follow a similar kind of route to the US. But then, of course, the EU is the biggest challenge, not only in terms of the amount of documentation that you need to put together for your technical file for review. There's also, the time constraints now, certainly from the days when I was in the notified body, the timescales to after submission to get that through the whole review process, has grown considerably. I mean, that in part is due to, obviously, there's a lot more documentation that needs to be reviewed, a lot more documentation for the notified body to put together to for that review. And also, we've got to remember that the number of notified bodies has reduced considerably. It's climbing back up now as more and more notified bodies are getting designated to MDR. But, you know, that number of notified bodies did drop off quite considerably when MDR first came along. And, of course, that means that not only do the notified bodies have a lot more to review, they've got a lot more clients, if you will. So it's just lots and lots of pressure. So certainly in the EU and under MDR, yeah, the time constraints is another big one for manufacturers to think about before they can get the devices out onto the market. But of course, in the EU, again, it's a big market. So there's all these things to weigh up, I suppose.
So Steve, as a fellow regulatory consultant, I find that it's hard to get people to understand quality and regulatory, especially when it comes to departments like R&D. What is your technique to improve interdepartmental cooperation?
So, it's a great question, Karen Deep, and it's something I've experienced, since I left the notified body and in the companies I've worked since, very, very much. It's sometimes what I call tribal knowledge amongst within companies. So these different departments almost sometimes work like tribes in isolation and don't communicate fully, don't fully understand. And that's where problems get introduced ultimately when, you know, regulatory submissions are made. And like I said before, bringing the technical file together with all the documentation requires, you know, a big team effort. I mentioned earlier in other questions that having the key functions involved within a company all together is really important. And I think I said it's from the very outset. Like I say, most companies will have some form of a stage gate process where, you know, a project moves through the various stages from, you know, the first inception of the idea all the way through to, you know, placing the device on the market. There are various stages that companies go through. And, you know, it starts out normally with an R&D function. It's research and development and understanding that. And so for that reason, things like, you know, quality, regulatory, all of that is the far end far downstream, if you like. And sometimes it's at that stage, there's a sense of those guys don't matter. We don't need to get them involved at all. You know, why would we? But it's really the opposite. They should be engaged from the start because as concepts and ideas are developed, at the earliest stage, you can start to understand the potential challenges that might be faced way downstream, way at the end. So, you know, just straight away from the conception, you can start to understand, well, what classification of the device is this? You know, or do we have other devices where we can use a similar approach to make the journey smoother, if you like? So there's lots of input. And I think that's the important thing is to bring everyone together and it doesn't have to be obviously everybody, but you know the key people who from the key functional groups certainly need to be involved from the start, and then slowly bring in more people as things develop and move forward. I think it's good just as a company perspective, so that everybody's fully understanding the journey as you're moving along and what stage everything is at. It's good for planning. It's good for time management. It's just good all around. And it's a practice that, you start to see more, but it's still something that I think a lot of manufacturers can work on to help in that regard. Kind of deep, yeah.
So for the listeners today who maybe want to get involved in quality and regulatory affairs, what would be your advice? Should they start with a notified body? Maybe should start with a competent authority? Where do you think that would be the best position for those guys to start with?
I think now, I mean, it's really very different, from when I first got involved in regulatory, coming into a notified body. Back then, it was a requirement that you had to have, as I recall, you had to have a PhD. If you were technical expert within a notified, you had to have a PhD, you had to have something like 5 years experience in a blue chip medical device company. Things have moved on quite a bit now because there's an understanding that, you know, other experiences are very, very helpful. I think it's good to have some, if you're moving into regulatory, it's good to have some experience, I would say, working within a company in maybe a different capacity to get an understanding of, say, manufacturing or design. But equally now, I mean, companies recruiting very heavily in regulatory and quality areas. So you can move in at, you know, at a junior level and get your experience to grow within a company now. And of course, now additionally, there's actually degree courses in regulatory and quality, which wasn't really around before. So it's much bigger and different area than it was a few years ago. So yeah, I think there's lots of opportunities and lots of ways to come in, and I don't think there's any really preferred way of coming in. I think regulatory and quality very much is is something that comes with experience. Because I think it's one career and one area where no 2 days are ever the same. And it doesn't matter how long you've been in it and how much experience you've got, something new will come along. Just in itself, it's often not black and white. It can be a grey area and it needs judgment, experience and a certain element of expertise, to make these decisions, which can be really crucial and critical decisions for manufacturers in terms of the devices that they manufacture. Yeah. So yeah, I think there are various routes in.
So Steve, how on earth do you describe to family and friends what you do for a living? Because that is something I really struggle with.
Absolutely. It's very difficult. It's often a case of just explaining that, you know, you're involved in the medical device industry, manufacture devices, and we're sort of the enforcers of the law, if you like, to make sure that those devices are safe and that, you know, they help patients in the right way, and that paramount is the safety of the patient, and all my role is to enforce the law and make sure the manufacturers stay within the law to make sure that the patients at the end of the day is safe and basically benefits from these devices that come along. But it is a very difficult very difficult concept and job to explain to people, to get them to understand. But that's what I usually try to say or do.
I agree with you. To some people, I'm a doctor. To some people, I'm a lawyer. To some people, I'm anything. I'm just wrong with it now. Whatever you think I am, I'm that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Steve,
just have no idea. You can say regulatory, quality, compliance. People have no idea. Yeah.
So yeah, the world of quality and regulatory is probably not the most interesting, but what do you get up to outside of work?
Me? Oh, right. Okay. Well, I've got two dogs. I live very rurally in a very nice part of the world, the Lincolnshire Wolds. Bit of an undiscovered part of the world, really. So we've got beautiful countryside right on the doorstep. So a lot of outdoor stuff, certainly with the dogs out and about in the summer on the bikes and things with my wife. And very much into gardening as well. So where we live, it's got a nice bit of land around us, and we're actually just developing, I'm in the process of developing quite a sizable veg plot. We did it in the last place we lived in. So that's all off and away. So rotivating out the veg plot, we've got seeds underway, chitting, potatoes, all of that kind of stuff. So veg gardening is a big one. Travel, of course. My wife used to travel quite a bit. I used to travel quite a bit, of course, when I was the notified body of travel here, there and everywhere. So we like to get away, but it's a challenge for us sometimes to find places that neither of us have been. So we're constantly trying to tick off the list of new places to go, new places to see. But of course it's endless. So that's great. We love doing that as well. Yeah. But it's a lot of outdoor stuff, especially in the summer, hardly ever inside.
So Steve, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. What one piece of advice would you be leaving the listeners with today?
One piece of advice, what a good question. I mean, if I'm going to speak from for people listening to this who are, you know, listening for if the medical device manufacturers or regulatory type people or whatever it is that always remember that the work that we do is all about the patient. So every day, keep that in your mind, that what you're doing is really a wonderful thing. At the end of the day, you're helping patients, and you're helping patients regain their lives and bringing back some happiness to them. So I take that away as your constant sort of wake-up thing. If you think about that every day, why you're doing it, I think it'll keep you well on track to always being driven to move forward and to, you know, constantly do the right thing.
Thank you for listening to episode 63 of the MedTech Podcast. If you have not already done so, please subscribe. If you wish to learn more about Steve, you can connect with him online or visit his company website, the links of which are provided in the description. If there are any particular topics or guests you would like for me to have on the show in future, then feel free to reach out.